in the Eye with Michael and Phil. It's news, but is it new?
Hello, and welcome to episode 0163 of Five in the Eye. This is me, Michael Ojojuru, here in the hot seat in the colourful studios at the Africa Centre. It's a very special episode, as 163 is a prime number. More of that anon. And all our regular listeners know exactly how much I love prime numbers.
And this is Phil Wood for joining Michael in the studio and revealing this show is going to be special for another reason too. We're going to be talking to a man who champions diversity in the media and who claims he was stopped from putting his case on a flagship BBC show recently. We're going to give Simon Aubrey another crack of the whip with our top story this week.
Live in the Eye.
That's right. And then Simon will stay with us and look at the other shows, the other stories that have a strong diversity angle. At number two, we'll examine the row over Monty Python and why the comedy star Terry Gilliam claims he now tells the world that he's a black lesbian.
Story number three is the report in the Times that the Tories have been told to forget Theresa May's pledges to tackle inequality and injustice that launched her career as Prime Minister.
Well, story number four? Well, perhaps you've been following Love Island. Congratulations to Danny and Jack on their win. But was the show as diverse as it could have been?
And our final story this week is the report from the BBC about the racist on a bus in Wales who told a Muslim to speak English. There was a twist to the tale.
We better not miss the bus and get on with the show. So that's this week's Five in the Eye.
Five in the Eye.
Well, we're very pleased this week to welcome a special guest, Simon Aubrey. And Simon, you were recently involved in a little bit of controversy, but we'll come to that in a second. Just tell us a little bit, perhaps, about your background for our listeners who may not be familiar with you. Tell us what's brought you into the studio today and something of your background.
Well, I hope I'm in the studio because I'm a campaigner for diversity. And I'm a campaigner for diversity because I went to the March on Washington and heard Martin Luther King. And about 5 years ago, I learned that diversity in the creative industries was at its lowest point ever. So that's why I started campaigning. And my main campaign is about the BBC because I have a simple slogan where public funds are concerned. It shouldn't get the money if it doesn't have the mix. The BBC gets a lot of money and it doesn't have the mix, particularly off-air. That's the thing I concentrate on.
And this was an issue that came up on the flagship Radio 4 programme, The Moral Maze, recently, which is hosted by Michael Burke, the former newsreader that I'm sure many people know. You felt at the time that on that BBC show, you'd been invited in as a guest to give evidence to the panel on this issue of diversity, but you felt you were cut short, didn't you? And what was it exactly that you'd been hoping to get across there that maybe you didn't have the opportunity to?
I was told the issue was merit versus diversity. And I've got a lot of cases where the BBC has failed to recognise merit in black people. And the particular case I wanted to talk about was Enno Alfred, who was born and bred in Brent, went to LSE. At LSE, she was recruited with two scholarships from the finest broadcasting training place in the world, the Columbia School of Journalism. So she graduated from there. She went on to work for the United Nations, the Daily Beast, the Atlanta Post, Fortune Magazine, Global Trade Review. This is a woman who had experience. She applied for 14 jobs at the BBC, like broadcast journalist, monitoring journalist, press officer jobs. She applied for 14 jobs and she didn't get an interview. Now, I'm not saying she should have got a job, but a woman as well qualified as her should have got an interview. Now, the real question is, did she then go on to sink without trace? Like a lot of black people, she had to leave Britain to flourish. She went to Nigeria. Within 6 months, she was presenting Good Morning Nigeria, and she was presenting an investigative strand. And the last cherry on the cake, the Moral Maze is made by the BBC Religious Department, and they value something called the Jerusalem Prize. Last week, Enno Alfred one of her programmes was nominated for the Jerusalem Prize. Now, that's just one BBC example of with somebody with clear merit, training, all the relevant skills, applies for 14 jobs, doesn't get an interview.
Now, for me, that is the most telling thing. It's not whether she gets a job. That's a second stage. But not to be considered for an interview. There's something wrong there. With that kind of profile, now, you're going to say, Michael, you'll say that because you've got a vested interest. Yes, I'm black. But no, if she's got that background, that pedigree, and she applies for that number of jobs, you know, she has to be considered. You know, and that's an all too common story for black people, black friends. I've got a friend, Onyeka. He's written the book on blackamoors in Tudor times for his PhD. He had to go to 65 different people to get someone who'd help him, a professor that would take him on. 65 that refused. Now, there's something going on here in terms of why black people are rejected. It has to be more than just the scholarship or their abilities.
I mean, Simon, do you have a feeling for stats and how widespread this problem is with the BBC? You've given a very powerful anecdote about an individual, and certainly that case seems compelling at face value, but you know, the counter to that might be, well, how widespread is this, and can you quantify it?
Well, the issue for me is, what is the rate of change? If you look at BBC studios, in the last year it increased by 0.1% in BAME employment, so it's currently at 9.6%. At that rate, it's going to take more than 40 years. The BBC says lots of good things about diversity, but it doesn't do what needs to be done. I mean, I'm 74 now. If it's going to take BBC Studios 40 years to get to 14% BAME and represent the population, I'll be long dead.
I mean, playing devil's advocate, you could argue today that we have a much more diverse media environment than we've ever had. There's, you know, in the 90s we saw the fragmentation of things like television. We've seen the huge growth of the internet and social media. Many people get their news from a variety of different sources, don't they? Is there a case for saying that we shouldn't obsess so much about the BBC when what we're interested in is the diversity within the whole of the media?
Well, I go to schools and I know what they listen to, mm-hmm. But the things that black people listen to are not, on the whole, publicly funded. The key point for me is the BBC has public money. Black people are paying for it. They're not properly represented. It's inequality, it's unjust, and it should be put right, and quickly. The BBC is just too complacent.
You know, I'm torn on this. Obviously, I've got vested interest, but There's a movement now for diversity as a tick box thing, you know, seem to be doing the right thing. Now, I'm challenged here, because I remember Mum used to say about being black in Britain, she used to say, it's always good to see your face, in the sense you see a black person, you get witness. But then at the same time, if it's there gratuitously, just box ticking, I'm always wary of that. So often, you see, and particularly, and the BBC does this, if you open iPlayer, you see a lot of black people or black faces in the programs, a lot. But the reality is somewhat different. So they can paint an image, the BBC does it, and other institutions, I'm thinking the National Gallery has black people on the front of their websites, similar thing. So diversity is a word, I'd like to see more inclusion. How do you do it, how do you measure it? I'd like to see some affirmative action where there's money involved.
Well, absolutely right.
Because I never used to be in affirmative action until I saw Colin Powell. Colin Powell is a result of affirmative action. The fact that he was an immigrant family, they came in, he joined the army, and he worked able to be the commander of the US Armed Forces through affirmative action. So what about having some affirmative action at the BBC?
Well, In Britain, they don't like to talk about affirmative action, but the Equalities and Human Rights Commission looked at what action you can take, and you can have ring-fenced funds attached to diversity of employment on programmes. That is the one thing that would drive change. The BBC refuses to do it. Every so often they say it's not right, we don't need it, but you know, just look at that example I gave, BBC Studios, 40 years is too long to wait to reach 14% BAM. And probably most of the people working in BAME studios are in London, which is 40% BAME.
Or going to be in London, that's another story as far as the BBC is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that reflected. I mean, my background's in the advertising industry and, you know, culturally very much the same kind of issues. I think that the advertising industry has become more representative of the UK as a whole over time. But for London, which is where most of the industry is concentrated, it's not representative. And I mean, there is an issue that says, well, actually, if the BBC, the majority of the BBC's work is done in Salford and it's done in London and so on, you should be reflecting the communities immediately around that area. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's very fair. And there's one fact I'd like to tell you. Broadcasting is regulated by an outfit called Ofcom, and they did research last year. Now, Viacom owns Channel 5. It's a commercial company, red in tooth and claw. It is doing better than the BBC on diversity.
Five in the Eye.
Well, hopefully, Simon, you feel you've had the opportunity to put across some of the points that maybe you felt you were denied in that BBC story. But we wanted to extend the show into a wider discussion of some diversity issues and get your opinions on those. And story number two this week is about Terry Gilliam and Monty Python. And so there has been a bit of a row, hasn't there, over the diversity within comedy at the BBC, and Terry Gilliam made some controversial remarks.
I think, the remark that inspired it was when the head of comedy at the BBC, now that's not a joke, but the head of comedy, said they wouldn't make Monty Python again because it was six Oxbridge white boys. Now, I was offended by that for the reason, and let me be upfront here, guys. You know, that was a programme of its time, of its day. We're talking about Britain in the 70s. Which was a very different Britain than we have today. So I think we can be a bit, you know, unfair if we go start beating up Monty Python in terms of the mix isn't right.
Here, obviously, you know, when you started the conversation on our last topic, Simon, you were saying kind of the behind the scenes roles are the things that occupy you the most, but you could argue, well, the talent is the visible face of the output of broadcasters like the BBC. Shouldn't we be concerned also about Michael's point about black people seeing themselves represented in that respect?
Of course, but if they're represented on screen but not off screen in the production and editorial roles, that representation will be shallow and deceptive. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have today. I mean, there are very few programs which are good representations. There's one that's out now. Who am I to talk? I'm not black, but my wife's from Ghana. And there's a program, a series that was on Channel 4, Chewing Gum, by, I think, a woman who's a genius, Michaela Cole. And she got endless awards at a Royal Television Society award ceremony. I came home from that ceremony. My wife and I started watching that show. I think it's aimed at younger people than ourselves. Mm. You know, I'm in my 70s. She's in her 60s. We just binge-viewed. That is so funny. And it's a show written by a black working-class woman, and it's based on a housing estate, and it is genius. Now, we've seen nothing like that from the BBC.
But I'm going to say, guys, we're talking about Gilliam's response to the BBC's comment in terms of its time. And the point I want to make is the BBC is moving with the times. I'm trying to defend the BBC, but bear with me. In its day, it reflected what was going on in terms of the number of women. I was looking for some benchmarks. The number of women who were in Parliament in the 70s, less than 5%. There was no BME.
No.
We've moved on. We've moved on now. Now, maybe not fast enough, the BBC, but I would almost say the BBC is almost irrelevant now. What's the average age of BBC viewer? 60.
Well, if the BBC can't stay in touch with BAME people, if it can't stay in touch with young people, and all the evidence is there. And I think one of the reasons it can't stay in touch is because it isn't well enough represented in its staff. But if it can't stay in touch, what on earth is the licence fee
for? Okay, I'm with you on that. But I see it's not just the BBC, it's a bigger problem. I was involved in a thing called A to B, Archive to Blockport. This was a group of academics bringing BME lives from history to the screen, through some suggestions for movies. And it was in response to the Oscars so white. So it's not just a BBC problem. It's an Oscar problem. It's a problem for the whole entertainment industry. And I would argue that people like yourself are doing a fantastic job of bringing it to the front. And it's a case of you need more support from the black community, or the black community needs to be actively doing it for themselves. What's your take on it? Because for me, I think it's more a case of black people should be doing it for themselves.
Well, there are black people doing it for themselves. Most outstandingly, Simone Pennant, who runs the TV Collective. If you're interested in this search the TV Collective. There's Lenny Henry, who's out there leading the way. Yeah. There are other people. And whilst we don't coordinate together, we work together and we complement each other. And Simone Pennant is out. I think she was given an OBE, and quite right, in the latest New Year's. She is out. So there's a lot of black people at it. I am highly trained. I mean, I've had a long career in broadcasting. I've had media training. So I'm very effective at what I do, is writing policy papers. Simone's got about 10,000 followers. Lenny is superb when he speaks. When he speaks, it's significant. So we're all working together.
But isn't it time that if we are to see better representation, whether it's off-screen, as we were talking about in the first segment, or on-screen within the context of the Monty Python and the comedy, isn't it time to say that some people, some of the old guard, are going to have to step aside and assume that they're no longer going to have an automatic right to be in the positions they're in? I mean, when we look at what Terry Gilliam said, it made me cry, the idea that no longer six white Oxbridge men can make a comedy show. Now we need one of this, one of that, everybody represented. This is bullshit. I no longer want to be a white male. I don't want to be blamed for everything wrong in the world. I tell the world I'm now a black lesbian. I mean, I'm sorry, isn't he trivialising in quite a worrying way the issues here?
I'm a great fan of Terry Gilliam's, his work on Monty Python. My wife even gave me his latest book for Christmas. I mean, he is a genius, but he's a very combative man. I mean, he falls out with film studios, he falls out with he has great ambitions. His latest film about Don Quixote, you know, took years to fund. I mean, he speaks in extreme terms, but the man's a genius. So, you know, if that's how he wants to do it, that's how he wants to do it, I'd say. And can I just come back and say something good about the BBC? I think you were right that in its time that show represented diversity. I think it was John Cleese who pointed out that they've got three grammar school boys, one poof, and Gilliam, and Cleese said he's not actually black, but was a Yank, and no slave owners. Now, okay, it was light on women, but everyone was light on women, but it was a mix.
No, but I would come the other way. It reflected its time.
Yes.
And I would argue, you wouldn't get six blogs together today. In Oxford, it wouldn't happen. That because there'd be other people involved naturally.
Yes.
And I'm very much in favour of these things happening organically. But more specifically, in terms of, I'm sorry for going on with the BBC, but I sense something, has it had its day? You know, its ability to respond to the market. You know, you look at things on YouTube, the other banjos, there's many programs on there which are made for a niche market, not mass market. Is that the future?
I talked to sixth form colleges on a program called Speakers for Schools. And the most important thing is not talking to them, but listening to what they say. And I talked to some black girls at the last school, and they don't watch the BBC. They don't get their news from the BBC. They get it from BuzzFeed, from The Mail and The Guardian, but they don't get it from the BBC. And the program they all loved was Dear White People. Why? These are girls who aspire to go to university. There's nothing on the BBC for them. I think that's why the BBC is losing younger viewers of all kinds. It's just out of touch. And if it remains out of touch, if it doesn't change very rapidly, there's a midterm review on the license fee. Now, maybe the government should say, look, you're out of touch. It's unjustifiable.
Well, I think... you could argue, couldn't you, that a lot of the output of stations like Radio 4, where you had your little upset recently, little contretemps, you know, you could argue that the output there is incredibly dated and doesn't really
hasn't really moved on in decades,
has it?
Well, I would say this, it has its audience. Now, Michael Burke is well known as a misogynist. He said there were too many women working in the BBC. This was in the press. I don't see why the BBC shouldn't appoint a misogynist. I just want it to have a richer mix. Now, there's too many people who are not interested in diversity working, but, you know, I think you've got to have a good mix.
Five in the Eye. Talking of mix, what about Theresa May and the Tory party? Recently, it's been reported that she wanted to withdraw the statement or didn't want people to say burning injustices. And I was shocked at that the Tory party wanted to rewrite her speech.
When she first arrived in Downing Street, wasn't it, Michael? She made quite a disarming speech for the time, because she was mirroring in many ways a lot of the things that perhaps Ed Miliband would have been saying in the general election of 2015.
You're getting on to my area, and I need to defend Theresa May, because allies of Theresa May have said that she's not moving away from the speech, but it seems to be other people in the party want to move away from the speech on injustice. And I think it won't be as big a split as Brexit, but I'm sure there's a split in the party on the issue of equality and injustice. And there are some great champions, and there may be people who are lesser champions.
Well, this is something we've discussed a number of times on the show, the split in the Tory party, but more unequally, a split in the Labour party, and the sense that when you're under layer on Brexit, soft, hard, the Norway solution, the Lithuanian solution, there's a mood for a new party. And I went back to that. I was just shocked to read that speech. The things that she was saying about the poor, about women, about young people. She was saying all these things, you know, young people can't buy homes. The poor find it hard to get a job. There's not enough women, you know, women in jobs, and they're not paid enough. It was extraordinary.
But Michael, it's all talk. And at the end of the day, you know, even more so after the election result that she got in 2017, which left her in charge of a government that's propped up by the DUP. She is in hock to the right wing of her party, as we've discussed many times. Yeah. She's worried all the time about how her pronouncements are going to be perceived by the right wing. And, you know, surely this is behind the report in the Times. There are people lobbying quite hard behind the scenes.
Phil, I want to disagree with you strongly. The only Labour minister who's really been hot on broadcasting diversity was Chris Smith. Mm-hmm. Then we had Ed Vasey under David Cameron, who really sorted out the BBC. Then we've had Matt Hancock, who was terrific. Matt Hancock, everything that Matt Hancock did about media diversity was in line with this Theresa May approach. I have no doubt that people like Ed Vasey, who's now on the back benches, people like Matt Hancock, who is now Minister of Health, will remain committed on the equality agenda. But I think there's a split now, and until recently, it was the party was wholly committed. Mm. Now it's clear that some of the more cynical members are saying this discussion of equality is backfiring, which is what I think the Times reporting, and that's why we should need to move off.
I don't think it's any surprise when we see in the polls since the Chequers meeting, support beginning to creep back up for UKIP in the polls and so on. I mean, there are people looking at this and thinking, aren't they? We're sending at one level the wrong signals to this block of right-wing voters, and they want to reach out to them. One of the ways they do it is by saying we're going to rein back on some of the softer policies that you pronounced when you arrived in Downing Street.
Well, we need to hear some speeches of affirmation on equality from those ministers MPs who support it. And can we just have a shout out for some people in the Labour Party? Because David Lammy has done a fantastic job. Tracy Brabin, who's on Coronation Street, she is terrific. Kevin Brennan wants to sort out the film industry and says if it doesn't get true representation, he wants to cut its tax breaks, because he's, again, I think, signed up to the idea shouldn't get the money if it doesn't have the mix. So, you know, there are good people on the Tory side, there are good people on the Labour side.
I guess that's part of the problem. There's not enough of them. And when you layer on the austerity and Brexit together, it's a toxic mix that puts the money for diversity to do these things, these good things. It goes to the bottom of the pile. So for me, I think coming back to this, what was it? What she said, this burning injustices. And I remember that expression you talked about. She wanted the society. Was it Thatcher? A society at ease with itself, you know? And Theresa May's, you know, an equal society. I think the Tories en masse today are moving away from that.
I don't think you can look at any party en masse. You've just got to look at the Labour Party. It isn't a party en masse. Fragmented party. And the Tory party is an even more fragmented. Now, you know, I'm no expert on Brexit, but if you want to see fragmentation, looks like rocks have been thrown through all the windows. You know, it is fragmented. They are fragmented. The only people who are not fragmented are the Lib Dems, and unfortunately, they're very few in number.
So, if we come back to this burning injustices, which they want to remove from their vocabulary, from their election vocabulary, burning injustice, diversity or the lack of, is a burning injustice.
It is.
It is. So, you know, I'm a bit cynical here. I think in these days, it's moving to the bottom of the pile in terms of the action. And so it's a case, if they being the Tory, Labour, BBC, whatever, not going to do anything, then let's do it ourselves.
People are saying that, and quite right, because you've also got to try it, do it for yourself, but also it's no harm in other people trying to do it. And, David Cameron, actually, and I can't talk about it yet, I wish they'd go public, but I was marginally involved in what the army is doing. Nobody, the armed forces, yes, have done more on diversity in the past 2 years than anyone else.
Do you remember, they actually got that advert with the Muslim. There was an Islamic Muslim prayed before he went to battle, and his, the rest of his troop respected his prayer. That's a British army. Did I actually air that?
That is the tip of a very impressive iceberg. And one day I hope they'll talk about what they've been doing. Because I went to a thing in Aldershot and it was fantastic.
Five in the Eye.
We've got to move on to story number four. Now, I've got to admit up front, I've not watched this.
We're talking about Love Island. Now, I have to say, one of my daughters has been an obsessive viewer of Love Island. So I would say that I've seen it on in the background. But to claim that I've sat down and watched it avidly would be a lie. But the issue here is, for those viewers who somehow have managed to keep themselves immune from all the coverage of Love Island, and you haven't heard what it's all about. It's a reality TV show where beautiful people are taken away to an island, and you watch their attempts at making relationships with each other and so on over a period of time, and then a couple win. It was a couple called Jack and Danny. Danny being the daughter of Danny Dyer, the star of EastEnders. But there's been criticism that the people selected for the show are very unrepresentative of wider society. So, for instance, Leanne Pinnock from the pop group Little Mix was said she was tempted to turn off the show because there is no diversity amongst the cast. Should we be concerned about shows like Love Island?
Phil, I'm sorry, let's get real. Should we be concerned about Love Island? I don't think I'm probably the target audience for
Love Island.
Well, I will now make a confession. My first question on the Moral Maze was about Love Island. I had to say I hadn't seen it and I wasn't aware of the dispute. But earlier this week, I thought, on the night of the finals, and I'd read an article in the New York Times about Love Island.
You'd written or read?
Read. I thought I should look at it. And I have to say, I found it utterly incomprehensible. I couldn't work out the rules of the game. And actually, equally incomprehensible is what the New York Times did. New York Times said at the end of the article, it says, sitting as it does at the intersection of trash and politics, coming as it does at a time when British viewers are hungry for lessons on modern gender politics, gaslighting, I don't know what that is, and the limits of masculinity, Love Island, perhaps unexpectedly, is mainstreaming some complicated debates. Now, I don't understand that. I don't know what gaslighting is, but at least it got a long article in the New York Times. I found it utterly incomprehensible, but I did speak to somebody in their 20s, and they actually said, well, why don't they have any fat people on? If my fat friend was on, you know, because of the rules of the game, which I don't understand, all the girls would be vying to get off with him. I mean, I don't know. I watched it. I don't understand it. I don't know what it's about. I know they had a racial mix on it, but it was certainly a range of body types, none of which I regret to say I have ever matched, whether it be in the women or the men.
Hang on, guys. You've got to get real. This is entertainment. This is pure, and this is bubblegum for TV. This is up there with Big Brother.
This is a show on ITV2 that's brought in some of its top viewing figures, 3.6 million people for the final.
ITV2, there's a reason why isn't on ITV1? Because it's marginal, it's fringe entertainment.
There are some issues about which I'm confused. Last Wednesday, I heard a headmaster on The World at One saying it was very dangerous because of its impact on teenagers' body image and the way it influenced, and it made them feel terrible and insecure. I don't know if that's true. I can't make my mind up on that. I mean, to me, I looked at it and thought, hey.
Well, in terms of representativeness, I mean, it was the case earlier in the series that one of the girls was revealed not to know what Brexit was, and that caused a bit of a stir. So maybe they are a bit more representative of the UK population than we might think. I suppose, should we care, should we not? I think that this is entertainment that has a big following on social media, following of a few million people on TV. So I think we should probably, that the producer should probably be at very least addressing
Phil,
it as an issue.
You've been too precious there, Phil. That's a trivial. If my mum saw me on that, she'd be ashamed.
Are you auditioning for next year, Michael?
Well, now that would be
with my body.
Maybe we should all go on. That would change the mix, all right. No. Forgive me for saying so, Phil. But no, I don't know. But I come back to my basic and my fundamental. ITV's a commercial company. I think it should strive for diversity. But the BBC is publicly funded. It should deliver diversity.
Five in the eye.
Well, our final story this week is a few years old, but it really kind of sums up where we are with diversity, and it goes like this. There's two women on a bus, and they're talking to each other, and a guy behind gets a bit upset. He doesn't like what they're saying. He says, you know, why can't you speak our language? And he gets irate with her, and the woman turns around to this woman and said, I should admit, one of them is wearing a hijab, and she turns around to the chap and says, she's speaking Welsh. The guy, he wanted her to stop speaking Welsh in Wales because he thought it was a foreign language. And this is where, you know, the ignorance is astonishing. The fact that the only language he knew, and this is horribly English, isn't it? Horribly English. You know, it's one language. Well, actually, we've got a joke in Liverpool, we know two languages. Well, first language is English, the second language is rubbish. And I'm sure this guy...
Where does Scouse fit in?
I'm sure there was an outrage at the time that we could do this. But there's two things going on. One, there's a serious side to this. This kind of this casual intolerance. This expectation we have that you should speak English in my presence. You know, it's happened on the underground, it happens regularly. And the second thing is, the guy's just plain stupid. What do you think, Phil? What are you on this?
Well, I mean, I can't understand how anyone who's grown up in Wales wouldn't recognise Welsh, even though they didn't speak it themselves. I mean, it's taught in schools. It's all around us. There's big attempts by the Welsh government over a number of years to preserve the language and the culture that goes with it. So it does strike me as an extraordinarily ignorant thing to say. But there again, Love Island, Brexit. What can we say?
Well, all I'd say is when I watched Love Island with my wife, we had difficulty understanding what people were saying. So, but it's a very good story.
You know, because it follows on from a story. Did we do the story about that American lawyer? A similar situation. There were two people, a customer and a shop assistant, were speaking Spanish. And he got mad because he was, this is America, you should speak American. And it ended up with a Mariachi, yeah, we did do it, the Mariachi band. Playing outside his,
he was named and shamed on social media.
That was fantastic. So you know, I guess we don't know this guy's name, do we? We could out him for his ignorance. You know, in terms of we don't do that in Britain. We're much more tolerant, much more inclusive.
Well, I mean, he should try going on a bus in London because he'll hear a dozen different languages being spoken on the top deck. So he wouldn't know what to do with himself, I think.
Five in the eye.
Well. That's it for show number 0163. Thanks so much to Simon for joining us today for the thought-provoking discussions on issues of diversity.
Yes, many thanks to Simon. And remember, we'll be back on the air next Friday at the same time between 9 and 10 on Colourful. If you want to get in touch in the meantime, why not tweet us at 5 in the eye. Until then, this is me, Michael Ohuzioru, saying, if you have been, thanks for listening.
And from London's Africa Centre, this is Phil Woodford wishing you well for the week ahead and reminding you to keep an eye on the news, as you never know what we'll be discussing on next week's Five in the Eye. Goodbye.
Five in the Eye with Michael and Phil. It's news, but is it new?